Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. And welcome to this episode of Autonomous Action Radio. I'm your cheerful anarchist host, Linda. Sometimes, when involved in resistance against this omnicidal system, it's too easy to concentrate on the bad things in the world. But while acknowledging all the troubles, it's still pretty good to be alive, breathing relatively fresh air, seeing the blue sky, and feeling the sun's warm rays. Since we're rapidly destroying the biosphere, it's definitely worth enjoying what we can while we still can. First up today, you heard Political Prisoners by Insurge. During the majority of the show, we're going to be playing a documentary produced by Miranda Gibson about political prisoners. Miranda is a former 4ZZZ announcer who is most well known for spending over a year in a tree in Tasmania as part of opposition to the destruction of old-growth native forests. Also later in the show, Wave and I are going to be discussing issues surrounding censorship. Most important to mention, though, is the continued uprising in Turkey. There is also a growing number of political prisoners, and reports that their families do not know where they have been taken. Protests against the government are continuing in Istanbul, where the uprising began, and also in Ankara, the capital, while marches have been held in over 10 other locations around the country. Media has also been targeted by police and not allowed to record, while public transportation has been halted to prevent people from travelling to Taksim Square. As well as harming people, the tear gas has killed animals in Taksim Square. Reports are that over 1,000 pigeons, 63 cats and 8 dogs have died. While the uprising and protest against the government is not entirely anarchist in nature, there are anarchists involved, and they have released this message. I am not here to soothe your ears. I am here to blow your mind into action, to move your asses, to hold a brick or throw a cocktail and open your wallets. I am against political parties. I am against vertical organization. I am against authoritarian movements. So who will back me up? You. There is also an uprising in Brazil right now against increases in public transport fares, corruption, and poverty. Up to 100,000 people have been in the streets of Rio de Janeiro and also Sao Paulo, Porto Alegre, and other cities. Meanwhile, protesters in the capital Brasilia have been on the roof and at the door of the National Assembly. A YouTube clip explaining the situation has been made, and Brazilians are keen for everyone to listen to their story.
Hello. As of June 10th, Brazilian protesters in the city of Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo have carried out rallies in protest of the rise in bus fare, which went up by 20 cents. Such protests have continued until today, at the time of the recording of this video on June 14th. You may not have heard of this, that with Turkey and Syria's uprising, it is difficult to keep track with everything that goes on in the world. And eventually, international news outlets might report on what is happening down here. They might do so the same way the national media is doing it now. They might portray the protesters as criminals and vandals and delinquents. It is of extreme importance that the truth reaches you before they do. The recent uprising that is spurring in Brazil is not an act of unwarranted violence, and it is not gratuitous vandalism. It is the result of what happens when a society is forced to put up with the ludicrous, nonsensical laws that are created only to benefit the lawmakers themselves, and which results in a wealth and social gap so outrageous it would be cause for hilarity if it weren't true. Some of the policies proposed and approved by our representatives are as follows. And I assure you, as incredible as they may appear, I am not making them up. They are real, and they are being exercised right now. Politicians have awarded themselves the privilege of receiving up to 3 extra months of salaries. So after resuming their year's pay in their December salary, they are paid thrice more, as if their year had 3 extra months. And their salary, by the way, is about 17,000 reais per month, while minimum wage stands at 600. Politicians have also awarded themselves privileges for paid expenses, such as air tickets, ranging from 10 to 22,000 reais. Government provided housing expenses to the tune of 3 to 4,000 reais. Private phone expenses for up to 1,000 reais per month, as well as an amount between 60 and 80 2,000 reais of spending money, which they then can use in order to pay off whoever they claim is necessary for them to conduct their daily functions. Politicians sometimes take advantage of this by hiring friends and relatives for completely made-up positions, professions that don't exist, just so they can give them free money for nothing. And once again, while all these things are happening, minimum wage stands at around 600 reais. Politicians couldn't care less about their constituents down here. And this complete disregard for their constituents has resulted in some deplorable situations in health, in in safety in education. It's common to have hospitals that look like war zones, with patients lying about in the hallways instead of in a gurney. Or to have a patient who is in critical condition, but is told by the hospital staff to which he goes that the hospital is full, and then being given the order to ride alone by bus, public transportation, to another one. Here, the country that brags about how well prepared and how advanced it is to host the World Cup has such deplorable and horrible and sad education conditions that people have just given up on it. Keeping in mind that a politician here earns 17,000 reais, can you imagine how much the salary of a teacher would be? 800. Imagine a person who went to college to exert a profession as important as teaching a generation of children to lead the country in the future, having to only allow herself 200 reais, or rather 200 bucks from your country, per week to feed her family. That's how it is down here. And yet the Brazilian capital turns a cold shoulder to all this. While these disgraceful facts still persist and occur, they are building right now, or have concluded building by the time you watch this video, the Mané Garrincha, the most expensive soccer stadium to ever host a World Cup game, at the tune of 1.2 billion reais. 1.2 billion while people starve in slums and die in hospital corridors. Also in the subject of preparing for the important events of the World Cup and the Olympics, poor people that live around the areas that are being prepared to host the soccer games of the World Cup and the games of the Olympics have been evicted from their homes in a near Gestapo-esque fashion. The police have marked the front doors of their homes, preparing them to be run over by a bulldozer the next day. And any resident that tries to stand his ground and stay home is being met with crowd dispersion evasion techniques, including gunfire, with total disregard for women and children. And even now, as we speak, a bill is being discussed that will render the Supremo Tribunal Federal, the government body that is responsible for keeping politicians in check, completely useless. If this law is accepted, then politicians will run free and be able to do whatever they wish to without anyone to check on them. This is absolutely unacceptable. It has gone on for too long and people are sick of it. Only this time something substantial can be done, and that is where you come in. In 2014, Brazil will host the World Cup, 2016 the Olympics, the two most prestigious and renowned athletic events in the world. Brazil cannot afford to have its reputation smeared now. If there is a worldwide outlash against the things that are happening here, the people in control will be forced to do something about it. Under the threat of a besmirched reputation and international pressure, Brazil will be forced to change. We're not asking you to do too much. Just please post something about the facts we have just told you in your Facebook wall or Twitter feed. Also, if you want to research in the internet to see if what I'm saying is true, go ahead and do so. As well as the recent riots that are happening in Brazil, in the cities of Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo, you can research them as well and talk about them. Write about them in your Facebook wall and your Twitter feed, along with the hashtag ChangeBrazil. Then tell your friends about this video and share it. Continue sharing it on Facebook, on the Facebook wall and the Twitter feed. In fact, I would like to beckon every vlogger that exists in Brazil that may see this video, and by extension every vlogger in the world that sees this video, to talk about these issues.
Autonomous Action Radio for Triple Z's Anarchy Show.
I want you.
Hello and welcome. I'm Miranda Gibson and you're listening to Until All Are Free, a radio documentary special exploring the stories of Eric McDavid and Marie Mason, environmental activists who are both serving sentences of around 20 years in prison in the United States. We'll be looking at why they are considered to be political prisoners and the international implications of their cases. We'll be joined by Eric McDavid's partner Jenny, who is part of Sacramento Prisoner Support. Peter Wirrabee will fill us in on the story of Marie Mason. Independent journalist and author of Green is the New Red, Will Potter, shares his insights into the political context of these cases. And former Earth Liberation political prisoner Jeff Lewis brings his personal perspective on what prisoner solidarity means and why he continues to fight for a better world.
All going to prison served to do was, I think, help me prove to the world that my argument's right and just.
First, let me introduce myself. My name's Miranda, and I recently spent over 14 months at the top of a tree defending Tasmania's ancient forests from industrial-scale logging. Some people called me a hero for the sacrifices that I had made to stand up for what I believe in. But I don't think I'm a hero. I'm just one amongst many, many people on this planet standing up for the earth and for justice, many of whom risk harassment, displacement, imprisonment, even death, sacrificing a lot more than a year of their life in a tree. Today's documentary is sharing just one part of that global story, looking at the cases of two political prisoners who were targeted for their environmental activism and labelled as terrorists, and who are now serving decades behind bars. You might be wondering why, as a forest activist, I'm telling this story about prisoners. The short answer would be that all of our struggles are interconnected. The long answer probably begins with my time in the tree. It was an amazing experience to spend over a year in the upper canopy of an old growth forest, but it wasn't without its challenges. And as time went on, for me, one of the hardest things became the loneliness and isolation. What really kept me going through all of that was the constant stream of support I had from people around the world. And I learnt firsthand the power of solidarity and how much a simple message of support can mean. It was this that first inspired me to send a message from the treetops of a remote old growth forest to a prison cell on the other side of the world. And that was the beginning of my friendship with Eric McDavid. What I didn't realise is that it would also be the beginning of a journey to uncover a story beneath the myth of American democracy, realising that those who act with political ideology and the will to create a better world are punished as terrorists, regardless of the fact that no one was injured as a result of their actions, and for some, regardless of whether they took any action at all. Realising that these laws begin to spread, encompassing broader and broader sections of the population, so that now new laws are being discussed in the United States that if implemented here would see me spending as much time in jail as I just spent in a tree, simply for the act of being in a logging zone. While supporting Eric and other political prisoners is still at the core of this issue for me, it has also become about much more. And that's why today I want to take you on this journey too. So let's start with the story of my friend Eric McDavid, who is currently serving a sentence of 19 and a half years after being charged with a single count of conspiracy. His arrest was the result of an FBI informant known as Anna, whose questionable approach led many to label Eric's case as entrapment. I spoke with Eric's partner Jenny to give us more detail.
In 2004, he became friends with this person that he knew as Anna. She spent the next year and a half of her life befriending Eric, sort of drawing him in romantically, and also befriending two other people and sort of creating this alleged conspiracy, pushing them all into it. And then ultimately, of course, that ended up in the three of them getting arrested and Eric, you know, then getting convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison, basically for something that never happened. No actions were ever carried out in Eric's case. Nothing was ever damaged or destroyed. He was really just accused of thinking or talking about doing things.
As you say, Eric received this long sentence of almost 20 years. Why was there so much disparity between his sentence and that of his two co-defendants?
Unfortunately, what ended up happening is that Zach and Lauren both flipped and started cooperating with the government. That included testifying against Eric at trial. And of course, in exchange for that cooperation, the government then sought lower sentences for them. Lauren was sentenced first and she received time served, which for her was about 2 weeks. And for Zach, who was sentenced a month or two after Lauren, that was about 6 months.
When Eric was convicted, he was given the longest sentence of any environmental prisoner in the United States at that time, until Marie Mason's arrest in 2008, in which he was eventually sentenced to 22 years. Peter Wirrobee tells us why.
Marie Mason is serving 22 years in federal prison for two acts of environmentally related vandalism in which no one was injured. Her days are spent in a maximum security, highly restricted section of a notorious prison far from her family and friends. For 3 years now, Marie's feet have only touched concrete and her view of the sky has been obstructed by wire mesh. After federal prosecutors threatened her with a life sentence in 2009, Marie pleaded guilty to actions committed 9 years earlier, damaging an office connected to GMO, genetically modified organism research, and destroying logging equipment. As part of her plea bargain, she was expecting a lesser sentence. However, due to the severe terrorism enhancement provision of the Patriot Act, she was given the harshest punishment of anyone convicted of environmental sabotage to date. An appeal for reduction of her sentence was rejected in 2010. Marie is considered a green scare prisoner.
And that reflects the Red Scare of the World War I era in the States and also the 1950s, the McCarthy era. And she is so because the penalties have been so severe, way in excess of what people convicted of similar crimes faced.
Independent journalist Will Potter investigated this phenomenon known as the Green Scare and published a book on the topic titled Green is the New Red.
My book is about how environmental activists and animal rights activists became the FBI's number one domestic terrorism threat in the United States. And I look at the history of these campaigns by corporations and politicians to single out nonviolent environmental activists as terrorists and actually to create new laws and new specialized prison units that target them as well.
One of the earliest Green Scare cases was that of Jeff Lewis, who was arrested in 2000 after setting fire to three SUVs in a car dealership in order to raise awareness about climate change. Jeff was labelled as a terrorist and originally sentenced to 22 years and 8 months. Jeff later won an appeal in which his sentence was deemed to be illegal, and he eventually was released after 9.5 years. I asked Jeff to share his story about why he took the action that he did.
In many ways, it was participating in forest defense that really showed me how corrupt the system really was. And I just sort of got to a point where you see all this injustice happening around you all the time. And you see, at least in this country, you see people that just don't really pay attention to it. Their eyes just sort of glaze over and it glosses by them because it doesn't directly affect them, or at least they don't think it does. But climate change is affecting everybody right now. And there's millions of people that are already beginning to suffer as a result of it. And so in June 2000, me and Craig Critter Marshall hatched a plan to set three light trucks on fire at a local car dealership in an effort to draw attention to climate change. Unbeknownst to us, though, we were under surveillance by a counter-terrorist unit that was operating as part of the Joint Terrorist Task Force. For a fire that lasted approximately 12 to 15 minutes, destroyed one vehicle and damaged two others, I ultimately received a sentence of 22 years and 8 months.
Just 22 years old, 22 years to go. An awfully long time to serve. For burning a cop, I don't care who you are. 22 years nobody deserves. You can philosophize the way you think things should be. Turn your head, hope it disappears. Somewhere tonight there's a young man named Free in a cell serving 22 years.
Considering the lengthy sentences that you and other environmental prisoners have received, would you define yourself, Eric and Marie, as being political prisoners?
What's happening is we see that these individuals are being punished more harshly because of the political ideology in which their actions are carried out. So, in other words, to give a comparison with my case, I set a fire that destroyed, you know, one car, damaged two others, and I went to prison with a sentence of 22 years and 8 months. At the same exact time, a woman by the name of Tamara Meredith, who was an Oregon firefighter, set fire to 1 million acres of forest in the state of Oregon, destroyed multiple dwellings and houses, and was sentenced to 3 years for that arson. So what we see is, regardless of the scale of the incident, if there are political ideologies in play that run counter to the status quo, the punishment is going to be harsher. And by the very nature of law, that would define that individual as a political prisoner.
Every step of the process, from in Eric McDavid's case, the use of informants to entrap him, to follow him around the country, the use of Anna, this young woman who was being funded by the FBI to collect information on political activists and to build a case against him when it was clear that there was no evidence that these activists were actually going to follow through on any of the plans that she was putting forward. And in Marie Mason's case, how she was labeled as a terrorist and hit with a terrorism enhancement penalty in the courts for merely destroying property. And in both of those cases, Eric McDavid and Marie Mason are facing decades behind bars because of the nature of their politics, not because of what they did, but because of what they believe.
I definitely think Eric is a political prisoner. If you look at why he was targeted and how he was targeted, it was absolutely because of his politics and because he identified as an anarchist. Anna was sent into the Crime Think Convergence specifically to target anarchists. And then, you know, throughout Eric's trial, they continually talked about not only things like anarchism, but also activism in general, his involvement in environmental work. They talked about things like the kind of books that he read, and then, of course, tried to use all of this against him. So, you know, the entire prosecution through and through from the get-go was incredibly politically motivated, including, as you said, his sentence. People who are charged with similar things, but not because of their politics, end up with sentences that are much, much lower than what Eric received. And, you know, keep in mind that Eric didn't even carry out an arson. He was accused of thinking about carrying out an arson.
As we're talking about groups that are labeled the number one domestic terrorism threat, it's important to point out the groups who are not being labeled as terrorism threats. And those include right-wing extremists who have been involved in murdering human beings, attacking people because of their sexual orientation, their race, their ethnicity, their religious beliefs. Moreover, we've seen since the late 1990s an exponential increase in right-wing violence. There was a report that came out from West Point, and they documented a 400% increase in right-wing violence over the last several decades. As this is all taking place, the crimes by animal rights and environmental activists have never actually harmed a human being in this country. So I think it's a really important question to ask is why are environmental activists being singled out as terrorists when people who have actually murdered human beings are not being targeted in this way?
The things they say you did are not crimes to me. CEOs destroy the earth, and they stay rich and free.
When I started researching and writing about these issues, I really started by focusing on money, because I think anytime you talk about politics, not just in the U.S., but really in any country, you have to talk about money and the political interests that are tied to that money and that profit. And with the environmental movement, I think really more than any other social justice movement is directly challenging corporate profits in really bold and unique ways, not just with people like Eric McDavid and Marie Mason or nonviolent activists using civil disobedience, but really the entire environmental movement at its core is about threatening corporate power and using that lifestyle decisions and also direct action to threaten corporate profits. And I think that's a big part of why these activists are being singled out as terrorists right now, the influence of corporations on the political process.
That was Will Potter, author of Green is the New Red. You're listening to Until All Are Free. My name's Miranda, and it was my experience of spending 14 months at the top of a tree that inspired me to start investigating this issue when I started writing to political prisoners. Interestingly, people would often say that my tree sit was like a self-imposed prison. But I would say no, it's nothing like prison. And I think for those of us on the outside, it's actually impossible to imagine and to know what that experience must really be like. When I spoke to Eric's partner Jenny, she shared some of Eric's story about his time in prison and also her personal experiences of supporting him these past 7 years.
Probably the hardest place to be was Sac County. That was the first place he went after he was arrested. He was in what was called total separation, which is basically solitary confinement. So the entire time he was there, he didn't have any cellmates. He wasn't supposed to be out of his cell when other people were. When we visited him, They had to block off the entire floor for visitation. All of our visits were behind a wall of glass. So, you know, we had the silly phones that were sort of hard to hear. And also we couldn't touch each other for the first 2.5 years. Watching your loved ones go through something so terrible and intense through glass is really traumatic. I don't really think there's any way to explain that unless you've been through it. After that, he went to a place called Victorville. Some things about it were better. He was out in general population, so he could, you know, meet people and make friends. And probably the best thing for me, anyway, was that visits there were contact. So that doesn't mean that we got to, you know, touch each other the entire time. But what that means is when I got there and when I left there, we would get to greet each other and say goodbye with a hug and a kiss. So that was the first time, you know, we had been able to touch since he was arrested. But in general, you know, it's prison and it sucks. His steadfastness and a really like ability to stay sort of grounded and healthy, even in incredibly adverse conditions, I think has been really inspiring. The day that he was convicted and the verdict came down, you know, I was a mess and his family was a mess and he turned around and looked at all of us and very calmly and sort of in a very grounded fashion said, "Breathe." He just really spends more time worrying about us rather than like worrying about himself. And he has been really successful at building relationships with a lot of people, both inside and outside of prison. And, you know, I think that has helped him stay mentally and emotionally healthy in a lot of ways. Honestly, I don't know how he does it. It's hard. It's definitely not easy.
Former political prisoner Jeff Lewis talks from his personal experience about the ways in which people on the outside can show solidarity for those behind bars.
I think I and every other political prisoner I know would say, keep fighting. I would much rather see people use their actual energy to get out in the streets or get out in the darkness or do whatever they can to actually contribute to making this world better. However, I also recognize that not everyone is in a position to be able to actively engage like that. And so, you know, writing prisoners, putting prisoner letter writing campaigns together, or just engaging in any meaningful way is always welcome. Prison can be a very, very lonely place, and it's really awesome to get to meet new people. I know that I definitely have some people that are, I mean, basically family to me now, and that entirely started with the exchange of one letter.
Building relationships with people inside is really powerful, not only for them, but also for us. I really can't stress enough the importance of writing letters to folks, just to, you know, to let them know that they're not forgotten, but also that they're still important to us and our movements and our communities, and to sort of keep them involved. Because, you know, these are folks who were really committed to the work that they were doing. And that's why they're where they are. And so I think in a lot of ways, feeling alienated and isolated from those communities and those movements can be one of the hardest things for folks about being in prison. And of course, you know, unfortunately, being in prison is expensive. And I think that any sort of like monetary help that folks can give is always super appreciated. Support funds are what enable folks to maintain their connections with loved ones. And, you know, also just talking to people about his case. Unfortunately, you know, Eric's case wasn't the first and certainly has not been the last.
As Jenny mentioned, simply talking to others about these issues is an important way to show support. I know for me, since I started writing to Eric and came to understand further the political implications of cases like his, I've been talking to my friends and family about this issue. Even my mum started writing to political prisoners. Yet there are some folks I've spoken to who say, why is this relevant to me? Or why should I support Eric and Marie when I don't necessarily agree with the tactics they engaged in as activists? So I asked my guests of today's radio show what their response would be to these types of concerns.
Well, there's a number of reasons. There's a practical response, and that is the government is ramping up the machine of repression, everything from militarization of the police to these extended sentences. So the questions of the tactics that Marie carried out aren't really what's at issue. This affects anybody who's going to protest, anybody who's going to say no to the machine. We need to be out there for them, if for no other reason than simple justice demands a reduction in these sentences.
Eric was arrested for what amounts to thought crime. He was very clearly the target of entrapment. And, you know, that could happen to anybody. And then as far as cases like Marie, I think it's really important for folks to remember that we're all working for the same thing here. Marie did above ground activism as well as underground activism for much of her life. You know, she really took her ideas and her passion and did what she thought was best for the earth and for other people. And in doing those things, she never, you know, she never harmed another person or another living being.
We really have to get beyond this idea of tactics, because it's far more divisive than it is unifying. It's not about who uses what tactic. It's about what tactic works. And really, the bottom line is we haven't found a tactic that works. So I would actually encourage people to begin working together and actually thinking about things strategically and how we can go about creating change, rather than taking certain positions that then allow us to define someone as an other. We somehow then are able to dismiss that person's opinion because we don't agree with their tactics.
Disagreements over those tactics simply don't matter. And I say that not to dismiss the importance of having discussions within movements about tactics, because I think that's very valid and necessary. But the government really is seeing no distinction between people like Marie and people like the Humane Society or the Sierra Club. What we're seeing now is people being singled out for heavy prison sentences and increased penalties and being criminalized for doing strictly nonviolent undercover investigations of animal welfare abuses on factory farms and slaughterhouses, and for nonviolently blockading roads and putting their bodies on the line in the trees to prevent them from being destroyed. And so I think it's really important to see that broader political picture, regardless of whether you think it's a good idea to destroy corporate property in the name of the Earth Liberation Front. I would hope that even if you disagree with those tactics, you would disagree more with the government's priorities of labeling these people as the number one domestic terrorism threat.
You're listening to Until All Are Free, and we've been talking about environmental political prisoners. A significant annual event is the June 11th International Day of Solidarity with Eric McDavid, Marie Mason, and long-term anarchist prisoners.
June 11th started as an International Day of Solidarity with me, because I was sentenced on June 11th, 2001, to those 22 years and 8 months. I think the largest event that we had encompassed almost 12 countries and 48 different cities. That was really amazing for me to be able to receive that amount of support. And as I approached my release date, I strongly encouraged the transition to being an International Day of Support with all environmental liberation prisoners worldwide. And that's really most directly impacted Eric McDavid and Marie Mason as the individuals serving the longest sentences right now for those types of actions.
That old IWW slogan, they're in there for us, we're out there for them. That's what we're showing on the June 11th International Day of Solidarity.
Eric and Marie are in for, you know, 22 years. And to sustain support for that long is going to require some ingenuity and some dedication and commitment. And so things like June 11th that happen annually are a really good way to build that kind of solidarity that sort of keeps these folks alive and involved in the movements and struggles that they were a part of.
For starters, you know, it really brought a smile to my face. It helped my case get much larger attention because it always became a media spectacle. And I think that it really helped to remind the people holding me captive that the world was really watching. And I think that there's a lot of strength in that. And I think that's what Eric and Marie both need, is to have the support of our entire struggle and our entire movement behind them.
You can find out more at June11.org. Of course, it's not just once a year that we need to be talking about these issues. Prisoner solidarity needs to be an integral part of all of our movements for environmental and social change, not just in the United States where Eric and Marie are imprisoned, but internationally. As a forest activist from Australia, I asked Will Potter what the international implications are for the way in which environmental and animal rights activists are currently being treated in the US.
We've often talked about state repression, meaning when the government oversteps its bounds and singles out people because of their political beliefs. I would argue what's going on right now is really a shift in a lot of ways to what I would call corporate-driven repression. In other words, corporations have been behind this every step of the way. We have to remember that under neoliberalism and global capitalism, corporations have no boundaries. They have no limits to any nation state. They pursue their profits around the world. And as they pursue their profits, they take these tactics with them.
We live in a globalized police state. The U.S. is basically the international police leader if being able to put people in prison and label them as terrorists for their activism is successfully implemented here, then it's going to be successfully implemented in Australia and England and Germany, and the list is going to go on and on and on.
I think the takeaway from that is not to really throw up our hands and think, well, there's nowhere to hide from this type of repression. There's nothing we can do about it. But instead, I think we should take inspiration from it and to share tactics of resistance, to share information about how all of this is happening so that we can better respond to this repression and better fight back.
These are folks who are working for and struggling for the same things. You know, we're all involved in these movements because we care about liberation for people, for animals, for the earth. And I think that we, you know, when we stand together, we're stronger. And I think that that includes people in other countries and other places. And I know, you know, on a personal level, for Eric and for me too, just knowing that there are people in other places who support him and support me often has been incredibly helpful for us emotionally and sort of strengthened our resolve.
I spoke to Jeff Lewis about what it was that sustained him through his years of forest defense activism and through his 9.5 years in prison.
Knowing that the injustice in the world that I'm fighting is real, that I am capable of making a difference, and because I'm capable of making a difference, it means I'm responsible to try. And so for my own core sense of honor and well-being and ability to look myself in the mirror every day, I need to stand up against all the horrible things in the world going on around me that I can actually directly affect. I think far too often we allow ourselves to pass our responsibility off to someone else, and we therefore in the process give our own power away. I mean, all going to prison served to do was, I think, help me prove to the world that my argument's right and just. They tried very hard to make an example out of me, to scare other people into not taking the types of actions I had or resisting the dominant capitalist culture. And in their effort to silence me and make an example of me, what they really ended up doing was putting me in the international spotlight And they didn't know how to handle that. I mean, I was thrown into solitary confinement a number of times for being able to do interviews or get my writings published in major magazines. They really didn't like the fact that 90% of the media that I interacted with portrayed me in a fairly good way and portrayed this idea of climate change being a huge threat as really serious business. What we're going to be seeing is a lot more of the direct impacts of climate change and environmental crisis. And I think as those impacts become more frequent and observable, we're going to see a rise in resistance to the industries, the corporations, and the government policies that have allowed this crisis to continue and come into existence. And as a result of that, then we're also going to see, you know, the powers that be trying to quell that dissent by throwing people into prison, arresting them. So I think we have to stop thinking about going to jail or being arrested as a possibility and start thinking about those scenarios as an inevitability. The whole nature of being a resistor means that you are in opposition to what our power structures stand for. And the only way to truly be effective and be in opposition to that successfully is to not be afraid of the consequences. And until we get to the point where we are able to simply say, you know what, I'm free and I'm not scared of you, we're not going to be able to create change. We really have to find a way to break the shackles that force us to live a life that is unfulfilling, unsatisfying, and responsible for the worst catastrophe to ever face the planet.
You've been listening to Until All Are Free, a radio documentary special about environmental political prisoners Eric McDavid and Marie Mason. I'd like to thank our guests on today's show, Will Potter, author of Green is the New Red, Peter from Support Marie Mason, Jenny from Sacramento Prisoner Support, and former political prisoner Jeff Lewis. Thank you for listening, and if you'd like more information, you can visit Eric's website, supporteric.org, and Marie's website, supportmariemason.org.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member, so of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killers.
This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
Suppress the revolution, a premeditated scheme. Introduce a drug called crack to us ghetto teens. Got along for wrong niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us bleeding with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I wrote this. Got these devils petrified, hiding from my hopeless focus. And so I learned to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click of military minds. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradox. Thugged out, drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When six dick, we block hits. When my Glock sticks, all hell, I don't bear wrath. The apocalypse, forever ghetto necessary. Picture food stamps, outlaw thug niggas never left the food
camp. We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block this back.
DJ
We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock this back. Where my soldiers is at? Where my soldiers is at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers is at?
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, are you with me? See, the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's deceased. Organize the streets in time, yeah, these devils petrified of a nigga in his right mind.
They tell us that we hopeless and hell bound. It's for the brothers in penitentiary jail them. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's a thug's wrath. Political contracts and bloodbaths. From a Toulouse Shakur up in the Rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continues.
Now if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something that was that tough, all right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real life shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock and rack. When my soldiers attack, when my soldiers attack. When the fuck my soldiers attack, when my soldiers attack. We got the real life shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock and rack. When my soldiers attack, when my soldiers attack. When the fuck my soldiers attack, when my soldiers attack.
I can see the Labour Party coming to power in the next election. Maybe, maybe not, who knows? But it doesn't really make any difference who's in power. The state remains the same. The structure's still there. They just tinker a little bit of it here and there. But it doesn't really make any difference who's in power. The state remains the same. The structure's still there. They just tinker a little bit of it here and there.
Tune in to Autonomous Action Radio for Triple Z's Anarchy Show. Every Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM or streaming at 4ZZZFM.org.au.
Well, censorship, it's come up lately, grey areas. There's been something that's been discussed on the back blocks of the internet about, you know, some... What was the issue to be censored over?
Oh, this rapper dude whose name I purposefully have not remembered.
Yeah, we can't mention it because that's promoting it.
And don't want to, you know, I don't want to, yeah, I don't care. I don't give a yeah, but yeah, just the extreme violence against women, and it's not just one person. It's like, you know, several things. And you mentioned, yeah, like, you know, punk and yeah, heavy.
There'd be loads of other misogynist stuff on.
Yeah, there's heaps of it. Oh well, yeah, we don't like that. But yeah, it's like extreme violence against women, and there's this idea that it's okay, and even the use of the word bitch. It's becoming more accepted, and it's still like a little bit funny, but yeah, just violence against women and sexual violence against women is something which, yeah, I think it just shouldn't be on happening.
So yes, well, these things, something like that in particular, which can't be condoned, but something that for me is a core anarchist principle is anti-censorship, non-censorship. And for me, that idea is about that we're all free to make our own decisions on things and can't be told what to think or what not to think. And you need to, and you just need to have that as a broad general principle. Otherwise, you know, who knows what someone's going to try and censor on me.
Yes, but then there's also the freedom of association and freedom. Like, I'm free not to turn on the radio and hear this really god-awful stuff. Exactly. About forcing women to have oral sex.
Making us quality personal choice there.
And it's, you know, and I'm personally free not to associate with certain people. And it's a thing also with, you know, discussions on certain Facebook pages or even discussions on the internet, wherever, even as anarchists, we have the right to choose that we don't want to have this discussion. Like, a discussion about something that came up was a discussion about anarcho-capitalists. Anarcho-capitalists are absolute scum, and they're misconstruing the idea of anarchy. And someone was saying, oh, but you've got to, you know, but it's freedom of speech, we have to have this discussion. And it's like, well, no, they can have that discussion somewhere else, but I'm not going to have that discussion because they can have it somewhere else, and I don't want, you know, I don't want to spend time doing that, having that discussion.
So you're free not to.
Yes, I'm free.
What was the other one? So then it's all right. We can kind of put things under the carpet and push them away, and they're going to go away by just kind of trying to censor them out of existence, which is what they're trying to do. Say with, you know, just to put it on that other sense of, you know, so censoring. What was that movie about Jesus? anyway, the you know, temptation, the last temptation of Christ. So, you know, or as Joe used to do, I mean, did that do anything to stop all these kind of ideas? Is what, you know, so I'm just talking about how efficacy, what is its efficacy? Is it effective to censor stuff?
Well,
you know, does it work?
It's sort of given a good opportunity. It's this stuff about, yeah, we're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Because having people are outraged, we're talking about it.
Which can get close to promotion, though, at times.
Being outraged. and like, you can't help that, though. I mean, but you have to have these discussions and find out. Part of it is this whole hipster, it's the hipster thing about being ironic. Ironic racism. Ironic sexism, and there's lots to be found on the internet. There's a really good web, I think it's called like Angry Black Girl or something, a really good website, and yeah, that where they tackle that stuff about ironic racism, and it's still racism.
Yeah,
it's still sexism.
Yeah, it can be hard to hear when someone's putting, well, when it's especially typed discussions, there's no inflections on voice. It's difficult to hear someone's irony in their voice. Well, and even if you are in a discussion, it can, you know, things are sensitive and you're trying to have a serious discussion. You have to be really clear anyway that something is being used as a example or an ironic thing or whatever you might, you know.
Yes, but if, you know, if people jump to the wrong conclusions, then... Anyway,
the good shit rise and the bad shit will sink to the bottom because it's just shit.
Yes. We're going to go to a song now, and this is another thing about censorship. This one is called Justified Homicide, and it's by Snog. And here's the thing. Violence is something you can't talk about. Like, you can't say, oh, violence is good. When you say violence is good as self-defense. Sometimes you need to be violent in self-defense, and that's what this song is about. But generally, like, violence, you're not allowed to say the word about violence. People jump to the wrong conclusions straight away. I found that a lot when I was helping...
You window smasher!
Yeah, well, windows are people too. We all know that. And I found that a lot when I was helping with the film NCIV with Franklin Lopez. People, you know, they're like, violence, oh, violence is bad.
All the time.
Yes.
If I cut it.